Hello, and welcome back to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. Today, we have a special guest, a new friend. We have Tim Price with us. He is going to talk to us today about a project he worked really hard on and I think is fantastic. It has to do with a book called The Labyrinth of the World and the Paradise of the Heart. Welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
This is the podcast to encourage moms that have been at this homeschooling gig longer than 5 years and plan on sticking with it through the high school years. The long haulers, as we like to say. We want to help you have the greatest of all time homeschool that meets the needs of your family by encouraging you with real conversations on the issues that pop up as you've been in this homeschool lifestyle for years.
So it'll be fun to try and see if there's people out there that need the encouragement and there's anything that we can do to help others as they get started on their journey. That'd be awesome. That's what we're here for.
Tim, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Yeah. So Tim, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about this book, and we'll just start from there.
Very good. Well, I am the father of two, the husband of one, been married for 32 years. And we live in Kearney, Nebraska. That's the middle of nowhere where the ducks fly the other way. And we've lived here just a couple of years. I got a bad diagnosis a couple of years ago, right before COVID. And we moved out here because our children live here. So if I go south quick, they can help take care of my wife and all that kind of good stuff, which wow. Led to my project, The Labyrinth of the World and the Paradise of the Heart. So about 20 years ago, I was doing some research about church-state relations, how the church relates to the state or how we should relate to the state. And I came across an obscure reference in the bibliographies of some books. And I'm an odd duck in that I look at the bibliographies. I want to know who is quoting whom and where they're sourcing information from. And in the back of this book, I believe it was The Pilgrim Church by E.H. Broadbent. And there was mentioned a Christian allegory by John Amos Comenius. And I thought, well, I know Pilgrim's Progress because I read it, you know, three times or whatever. And so my interest was piqued immediately. Well, I was not let down at all because I got the book through interlibrary loan. And I was absolutely blown away by this book. It was not easy to read. It was probably on a doctorate level, reading level. It had lots of footnoting. It had a 55-page introduction in front of the book. So you could be virtually punch drunk by the time you get to the narrative. And I thought that. Then I was so interested in this that I immediately ordered my own copy. And I read it to my children at the time who were 11 and 13. Now they're 30 and 32. So it's a long time ago. They enjoyed it and they were challenged by it. My wife read it. She loved the book. And I was so taken by it that I did some research and found out that it had not made it into English until 1901. Huh, that's really odd. A 400-year-old book that hadn't made it into English until 1901. There's more to the story there. And I found out that the book had been banned in Czech lands where the author came from. And because it was available first in Czech, which is a less accessible language, well, it really hadn't gone very far. It had been translated into German and to Latin, which is where the Puritans got a hold of it at. But it just was kind of a forgotten literary piece, at least to Westerners, Northern Europe, and certainly the Americas, but still makes for a very interesting story. And so what I want to do is transition a little bit to talking about the story itself, if I can.
Yeah.
Well, this book inspired Pilgrim's Progress, and you're about to find out why. It, too, has a pilgrim going through the world, and he's on a journey. He wants to learn how to live a good life. Who doesn't want to live a good life, right?
Right, yeah.
But very, very appealing on that level. He quickly attracts to himself a pair of guides. And these guides are very interesting. Mr. Ubiquitous, which is a lot like Mr. Worldly Wiseman in the other story. And then Mr. Delusion. And Mr. Delusion is kind of an accusatory, manipulative person who shames and who browbeats about things. Mr. Worldly Wiseman is just this round, kind of above it all kind of guy who has grand ideas about things and perceptions about things. And their purpose is to get Pilgrim to see the world the way they want him to see it. Not the way it really is, but the way they want him to see it. And so they go on a tour through the world, which in this book, the world is a city that is laid out in seven avenues. And then there's an adjoining sea or whatever around the city. And they go on this grand journey and they go through everything. They go through the trades. They go through marriage. They go through politics, higher learning, through intelligentsia, which is everything from law to doctors to whatever, and politics and military. And at the end of the trip, Pilgrim realizes that he cannot live a good life. It's impossible to live a good life. But what you are contributing to the vanity, violence, and destruction of the world. And that's not something he wants to do. He wants to do something that's uplifting, that is transcendent, that is positive, that affects himself and others in the most positive sense. And even as altruistic as he is, he realizes that he himself is incapable of giving or living this good life. And at that point, the guides get disgusted with Pilgrim because he won't make a decision about joining the world in one way or another. And so they leave him and he is met by Christ. And Christ invites him into his own heart and tells him to shut everything out. And he reveals himself to Pilgrim in the most evocative way. And the response between Pilgrim and Christ is probably one of the best illustrations or depictions of conversion in literary examples that I've ever seen in history. And I've read a lot of books. And Christ disciples Pilgrim and tells him what he expects of the believer, of Pilgrim. But at this point, Comenius, the author, is really talking to us all. Then Christ sends Pilgrim back to the world to be light, truth, and a reality the world can't be for itself. And I find that message to be wonderful, especially in the day in which we live. The world is changing so much for all of us. It's frankly scary for a lot of us. I want to applaud you guys for your work in homeschooling. And that's really where I feel that this book could be most practical. One of the ways it could be most practical, because what's happening in school these days is nothing short of indoctrination. They're not interested in really educating people. They're not really interested in getting people to think for themselves. They're interested in getting people to parrot what they want them to parrot. And the kind of junk that they, you know, get classes on, everything from condoms to wokeness and everything else, from the age 5 to the age 17. And these schools have, you know, 6 to 7 hours with your kids. And you have the leftovers to try to disciple them or try to affect them. But there's really no way that you're really going to fundamentally impact them, trying to offset the garbage that is going into them in the public education system. So they're very much like Mr. Ubiquitous and Mr. Delusion, who are trying to get students to see the world the way they want them to see it, not the way it really is. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so remarkable about this book. Comenius himself was an educator. He lost his entire family to the plague, and he lost his country to religious and political factions fighting one another. And he had to move all over Europe from country to country to country to keep his band of believers, his church, together. And so his life really parallels the book. And I think that's a message that we need to begin to get our heads wrapped around is, are we as believers being alien strangers, sojourners, and ambassadors for what we understand to be true in a context of an increasingly aggressive and disbelieving culture and society? And so Comenius, through life and allegory, gives people an encouragement, because he's just not some John C. Maxwell to tell you, here's how to do it perfectly, because I'm already there. He's a guy who has suffered an awful lot for the gospel's sake, and he lived to tell the story. He was an educator, and he developed many things for early childhood development. For instance, he had two books that he wrote amongst the 140 that were published. One is called The School of Infancy, and it's for young mothers to help them to understand that their children are different, not in the sense of special needs, but they could be special needs, but the idea of approaching them with understanding as to their bent in life. You know, the scripture says, train up a child in the way he or she should grow, and when they are old, they will not depart from it. And that was part of Comenius's idea, is that students have different learning approaches or different ways of grasping information. And so a parent and or a teacher is going to be miles ahead if they understand that some students are auditory, some students are tactile, some students learn through play and through discussion. And so if we can be prepared for our students to learn in these various different ways and be prepared to present information to them that to be learned in ways in which they can learn it, they will pick the stuff up much faster. The other book that he wrote is called The School of Play. And so he invented recess, which I think is very, very important part of education. And he wrote this idea because he wanted students to play in the things that they're learning. So taking what they learn in the classroom and then role-playing with it, or just getting exercise and taking their brain away from all of the wherewithal of you know, book learning and whatnot, and get it into dialogue, get it into acting things out, get it into figuring out ways that they can exercise and be active in their learning, in their learning time. And so these are just two of the many, many books he wrote. He is, Peter Drucker called him the father of primers and picture books. And in the back of Labyrinth of the World, there's a whole 32-page section about who Comenius was and why he's valuable and why Labyrinth of the World inspired Pilgrim's Progress and why Comenius is still important. Comenius is important, so important that the Nazis and the communists tried to use his image to ingratiate the Czech people to their causes. And they thought, oh, if we use something of their heritage, we'll tell them that he was a wonderful philosopher, and he was. We'll leave off the part about him being devout and all that kind of business. But it's coming back to bite them, because people are finding out that Comenius was extremely devout. He was part of a group called the Bohemian Brethren, which morphed into a more well-known group called the Moravian Brethren. And the Moravians were the measuring stick, have been the measuring stick of evangelical missions, Protestant missions work, ever since they organized. And they were absolute phenoms in missionary work, so much so that even John and Charles Wesley were taken aback by their tenacity and their spirituality and their dedication that they had. One story about them, there was two brothers that were in Hamburg, Germany, and they heard about an island in the West Indies that no, it was a slave trade island. And they heard the slavers talking that there was this island that no missionaries, pastors, people of the cloth, no church people were allowed to go and to work with the slaves there. And they were so overwrought by the lack of testimony of Christ in that place that they approached the slavers about going to this island. And they sold themselves into slavery as the means to buy the one-way ticket. That's really believing in what you believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a huge step to take. A lot of personal sacrifice there.
Yes. So these people were what some might call radical. And radical, it doesn't mean extremist. Radical means going back to the basic, most essence point of the New Testament and actually putting it into practice. This book does exactly that. It really brings us back to the key essence of the transformed life, that Christ in us, the hope of glory, that conversion doesn't mean a belief in a belief, or doesn't mean an experience that happened 30 years ago or whatever. It's an ongoing thing where Christ is building and working in us to inspire us to do things that the world cannot deny, and they can't avoid, and they can't compete with. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that puts them on edge. It really puts what we're doing out in front for people to see and understand in a way. You know, we see the story of Zacchaeus, for instance, in the Old Testament or in the New Testament, where he met Christ and Christ spoke to him and his life was transformed. And he says, I'm going to give back four times what I took from anybody, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. Now, we don't hear much about Zacchaeus after that, but the beginnings of his situation were so radical and so above and beyond the typical, you know, I prayed a prayer at one point in my life, and it's made no different since. It's so opposite of that. We can see the man born blind. We can see the demoniac who was set free. We can see the woman at the well. When they met Christ, something happened in their life. There was an ongoing dynamic that happened in their life. And Comenius is talking to us about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorite quotes that was in the book, it says, "For those who love God with all their heart need no copious prescriptions as to when, where, how, or even how often to give service, worship, or honor to him." And I feel like that is so relevant today to believers. And so many times, you know, we get lazy or forget who we're serving or why. And that radical transformation that's happened to us when we were converted to the faith, it just seems to have faded or whatever, due to our own lack of persistence and trying to build that relationship with God. And so I really, really, you know, I think I told you earlier, I'm not one to read an allegory. I would probably wouldn't pick up an allegory myself if you hadn't given this copy to us, but I was really, really pleased reading it. I've actually never read Pilgrim's Progress, and I definitely hadn't heard of The Labyrinth of the World, but I'm so glad that we've met you and have been able to talk with you about it, because it was really refreshing for my walk in my faith as well. And I think, like you said, it's a fantastic book for any homeschool mom that's really wanting to add something different. You know, all the different elements of the allegory are adventurous and exciting and really eye-opening. And I think kids will totally pick up on that. I haven't had my kids read it yet, but it's because I was reading it and I don't want them taking my copy. So I'll have to get one for my kids for school.
How old are your kids?
I've got 17, 15, 13, and 5-year-old. So,
okay. Yeah. Now, I was recently at the homeschool convention in South Dakota, Sioux Falls, and a guy that was there helping me, he had the audiobook form, and they were listening to it on the way to and from the convention. And his 8-year-old son was upset that they had to turn it off. So it's a book that really can speak at a number of levels. One of the things that I wanted to do, I had mentioned earlier today when we were visiting, that there are only 4 editions of this book aside from mine in English. There's a 1901, there's a 1942 that I've never seen, There is a 1998, which is a Catholic edition, and then there is a PDF version from Oxford, England. And what I found was that all of them had this 55-page introduction in front of not just the Catholic one that I saw, but all of them had this long, drawn-out introduction in front of. And why any publisher would do that to a reader, I have no idea. The other thing that I found was that most of them read fairly mechanically. They were not readable in the sense of something, you know, if you sit down and read like Laura Ingalls Wilder, The Little House on the Prairie, it reads very nicely. It is not a lot to try to step around to try to understand what she's talking about or whatever, or Tom Sawyer or whatever. I read those all to my kids. But The Labyrinth in former editions is very difficult to read. The Catholic edition is probably a doctorate level book. And I wanted something that was way more practical. And so what I did was I broke out the dialogue into paragraphs. In some cases, I had to associate a character to the dialogue because it wasn't clear in any of the former editions. There was also some theological things that have crept into the book over the years. And I wanted to let Comenius really speak for himself. He had a very distinct view. He worked with Catholics and he worked with Reformed people and Calvinists, but he himself was not. He also was deeply affected by Hutterites, who are Anabaptists. They're German Anabaptists. And that comes through in the fact that he did not get involved with the politics of the day. He was more like Daniel. He came in and he did something for the politics of the day, but he didn't get involved in their politics, no matter what it was. And so there's really a lot to admire about this guy. You know, he had some shortcomings too, but so far as I can see, there weren't too many of them. The way that it inspired Pilgrim's Progress, many people will ask about this. John Bunyan was a simple man, an unlearned man, if you will. He was a storyteller, a preacher, a Baptist preacher, but he also worked with the Puritans. And Comenius had worked with the Puritans in Leiden, Amsterdam, and in London. And they were involved in education. They were all the ones that he was involved with knew Latin. So they knew his story about education and the labyrinth. It has been surmised that when these leaders, or some of them, that were known to Comenius and known to John Bunyan came to visit Bunyan and tell him what's going on in the outside world, you know, they told him bits and pieces about the labyrinth of the world. And as Bunyan is rotting away in jail, he's thinking, as a storyteller, hey, I could tell a story better than that. And there's no way that two stories could be written that are so doggone close. You know, you've got a pilgrim going through the world, told in allegory in two parts, and he meets characters with character trait names, lots of them, and there's a salvation message, all part of the same scheme. Well, that came from somewhere, and that somewhere is the labyrinth of the world, the paradise of the heart.
Well, I think you did a beautiful job in helping us to have a very readable edition of this book, and not just working with the words of the book, but making it beautiful as well. It's a hardcover. I love the pictures, the illustrations are just fantastic. I'm a very visual person. So reading a book is not just, you know, about what's on the page as far as the words go, but then the feel of it, the look of it, and you did a fantastic job. The covers art is wonderful as well. So thank you. Thank you for sharing about this. Where can we find you if we would like to get more information, or where is the book available to purchase for our listeners?
It can be either gotten at Amazon. Amazon is playing games with me. So if you find Labyrinth of the World, the Paradise of the Heart with the nice, beautiful cover that you know you guys can put up on your website there on Amazon, you can get an audiobook, ebook, and in hardbound edition. But when you get the hardbound edition, you have to look at the button in the far top right corner saying see all buying options. Or you can get it on my website, which is labyrinthoftheworld.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Tim. Enjoyed this conversation. And I love your eloquent way of putting all of these things. You've touched on a lot of topics that are really interesting to me. And Amanda, I know we've talked a lot about politics and religion and just our faith, and of course, books. Always, we love books.
Yes. So. Well, Mr. Comenius is a pearl for us at this point in time when we're in such changes. We need to know that God is absolutely sovereign and absolutely in control. And we also need to adjust our view about how we relate to the world around us. I think sometimes we can have a bit of an arrogant perspective, like a rights holder. And I think God is really beginning to work on his people in this country to see that when we come out of the kingdom of darkness, we come into the kingdom of light, and that has citizenship responsibilities, and that has perspective change. You know, when I go out of Kenya and I go to Iceland, suddenly it's not, you know, sunny and shiny and you know, semi-tropical and all that kind of good stuff. And so my perspective on life has to change and how I approach it. And I think that's what Comenius brings to the table for us in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful. I'm going to look for the audio edition. I think, you know, when I'm doing projects or things or gardening, I can listen to it and maybe share that with my kids. I'm excited. I've just been listening and just drinking up everything that you're saying. I'm loving it. So thank you very much for joining us. And I'm so glad that we were able to get connected and have this.
Good. Time. Well, I am so excited myself. And I go to these shows, these homeschool shows. And interestingly enough, the end of the month, I have to go to a national Czech polka festival in Ennis, Texas. And the Czechs are very proud of their history, and they do not know about this man, at least the ones here. In the Czech Republic, they do. And one of the organizers said, you know, I'm not religious. He said, but what you're describing, he goes, if I could find church like that, he goes, I'd be very interested.
Wow.
And he told me that some of the Czechs from the Czech Republic, high government officials are coming. And he said, a couple of years ago, they asked about, how can we reintroduce God into the public dialogue? It's like, wow, what an opportunity to go talk to these people about their own heritage. Mm-hmm. And what Mr. Comenius brings to the table as far as bringing God back into public dialogue and to the public square where people can decide for themselves about this character we call God.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's
wonderful. So I'm excited.
Well, thanks for listening. You can find us at gohomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com if you have questions or would like to get more information. We also have a Facebook page and a Facebook group, Go Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. And we're also on Instagram, Go Homeschooling Podcast. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to suggest topics for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, find us at Goat Homeschooling on Facebook, on Instagram at Goat Homeschool, and email us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.